So we'll do a little chazara. We started Kufi Beis Amud Aleph, and we made some pretty good progress here on Kufi Beis. We spoke about the concept of a Dober Charif. We had a lot of discussions about Tznon and the combination of two factors, Dover Charif plus Duchke de Sakina. We had a discussion about turnips, which is a Dover Masok. Then we had this Tered case, which sort of fit into this new middle category, according to the Rashba, you remember?
Right.
It's not a Dover Charif per se, but it's Moshech Tam. And therefore, once again, if you cut it with, you cut these, we call them leaves of spinach, you can no longer use those leaves for milchiks, for kutach. Then we had this magical way of changing the status of the knife by cutting the sweet vegetable like a turnip, and then subsequently cutting the tardin, these leaves of spinach leaves. We weren't sure if that would be enough to change the process in the case of tznon. I mean, the Rashba says that this process of cutting a sweet vegetable and then cutting the tardin only works by tardin because it's not really a Dover Charif to begin with. It's only a Dover Moshech Tam. Then we had a whole discussion about putting an open salt container next to kutach, and they're both open, and you might mix the two together. And the Gemara concludes that that's also. In contrast, the Gemara says if you have an open vessel of vinegar next to kutach, open vessel of kutach, that's mutter. And the Gemara differentiates because the Gemara says that in the case of salt, it's nikar, and there's no possibility of bittul. And that's called the Isab Isure Be'ene. And once the Isur is be'en, in this case the kutach, because of its thickness, is visible in the salt. Again, he doesn't pay attention that it's there, but that visibility, the potential to see the kutach, is what's mafkia. It completely undermines the possibility of bittul. But in the case of vinegar, it's called lesa li sure be'ene, which means that somehow the kutach gets dissolved in the vinegar, and therefore even in the worst case scenario he doesn't realize that some of the kutach spilled into the vinegar, it would be batel in the vinegar because it's not nika. Then we spoke about a case of a piece of meat that fell into kutach. And here, the law divides up into various scenarios. As a general rule, the Gemara says it's mutter. But that doesn't apply in the following cases. Let's say the meat was salted, and then we have a principle called moliach hareyu kiroseach. And therefore, if this salted piece of meat falls into milchiks, then it's as if they were cooked together. That's a serious problem, obviously. Then we have another case, which is tzli. And that means that one of two things. Either it means it was roasted, even though it's cold, or the way the Ramban learns it, it's roasted and it's hot. And in such a case, if it falls into kutach, you need what's called klipa. Then there's a third limitation, And that's the case where you have a piece of meat that is full of crevices, and then the assumption is that the milk will now be absorbed and penetrate through these crevices and circulate throughout the entire piece of meat, saturate the entire piece of meat. The Gemara then has a discussion about if the piece of meat was spiced with tavlin, which makes the meat soft, and therefore once again it is bolea, it absorbs the kutach, and therefore the taste of the milk circulates and permeates throughout the entire piece of meat. And the last sugya that we started here on Kuf Yud Beis is the sugya of cutting a loaf of bread on top of a piece of meat. Now what happens is that this piece of meat is, shall we say, domless. Domless. What do I mean by domless? Meaning the dom has already been removed, but yet there's still something coming out of the meat, even after the dom was removed. And that's called mohel. It's some sort of a red liquid. It's a light-colored liquid. It's not thick, dark blood. And we quoted the Ravid. The Ravid learns that this whole sugya, which is the sugya of Shmuel here on Kuf Yud Beis, about cutting a loaf of bread kikar shechotach aleha basar.
Well, is that only cutting the meat on the bread?
Yeah, cutting the meat on the bread, sorry. And the problem, says the Ravid, is maras ayin. So this is not really dam. It's not called dam haporesh min habasar, because whatever dam was in the evarim in the veins or the vessels of this piece of meat, of this flesh, that was all removed. What comes later is a problem of maris ha'ayin, that it looks like there's dam in the bread. And that's why Shmuel prohibited eating this bread. But the Gemara adds three conditions. Let's see if I remember the number correctly. If not, we'll change the number. The first condition was that you could actually see the redness of the liquid that came out of the meat in the meat itself. In other words, the meat is still, you know, obviously red, so there's a significant volume, so to speak, of this mohal, of this fake dam that's not really dam. And then the Gemara adds a second condition. And the second condition is that the piece of bread is saturated with this dam from one side to the other. And that's going to create maris ayin. And the third condition was that the mohel still has some level of thickness to it. If it's totally liquid, then it doesn't look like dam at all. So I guess there are different stages. The first stage would be, let's say, when you roast a piece of raw meat, the dam comes out of the meat. The second stage is that there's some asmeche, there's some mohal that's still thick that comes out of the piece of meat, and that's even obvious on the meat. You can see the redness on the meat, and then it saturates through the bread on both sides. And then the third stage, the Gemara says, it becomes so klishta, it's so thin, that it doesn't even look like dam at all. Then the Gemara has a whole discussion about what do you do with this piece of meat. What do you do with this piece of bread? You cut the meat on top of the bread, and now there's a prohibition of maris ayin, according to Shmuel. So Shmuel says that you're not allowed to eat the meat, but you can give it to your dog, because it's not Asur Ba'anah. Rav Huna apparently held that the piece of bread is still mutter. Why? Because he gave it to his shamash, to his servant. Because the Gemara says, how could he give something to his servant that's asur? And the answer is he held it was mutter. Why didn't he eat it himself? He was an istinus, and he was repulsed by the fact that there was a redness in the basar.
In the bread.
I'm sorry, I keep getting that mixed up. Thank you so much. And then Rava would eat the bread itself. And he held that any redness, any red liquid that comes out of the meat after it was already roasted is called chamar basar, which is yayin basar. It's the wine of the meat, but it's not dam. And the impression you get, and I hope I'm not misleading anyone, is that Rava has no problem when you cut a fully roasted piece of meat over a piece of bread. So let me just read to you a footnote here, which I'm not sure if we did or we didn't do, I don't remember. He quotes the Rashbah in the footnote, and he says that Rava Hitir, Rava's leniency with regard to this loaf of bread, is kasher habasar kvar nitzle, because the meat was already roasted even before he cut the meat over the bread, be ofen shehuroi l'achila l'rov b'nei adam. So it's fully roasted, it's already edible. V'af Shmuel, so now I think the Rashba is going to try to reconcile the Iser, the Chumra of Shmuel, with the Kula of Rav, that Rav ate this bread. He says, Af Shmuel lo asar samohel hayotze minatzli ela mishum maris ayin v'Rav lo chashash l'kach. So it seems to me that if I read the Rashba correctly, I didn't mislead you before, at least according to Rashba, that's good company, that there's no, Rav rejects Shmuel and he's not worried about maris ayin, which would mean he even in all those cases that with all the restrictions of the Iser of Shmuel, that it was thick and it was, and the bread was saturated, nevertheless, Rava says there's no Maris Ayin. Now it could be, I'm just throwing out a possibility, that in Rava's time, it was absolutely customary, it was mekubal, it was popular to assume that once you did Sli, anything that comes out afterwards is not Dam. So that was very well known. And therefore, if he cut the Basar that was Salui, that was already roasted in this Kikar Lechem, people knew that whatever was coming out of the Basar was not Dam. That's the Rashba. Now the Ran says that Rava went even a step further. And he was Matir, even in the case where it wasn't fully roasted, but rather kimachal benjo soy, which might mean that's halfway roasted or a third of the roasting, and most of the people would not normally eat it, but it's still considered cooked, or in this case roasted, but I mean it's already mavushal. That's called machal benjo soy. It sounds to me like the Ran is introducing here a halachic conceptual principle, not, you know, does it look like thick moel that's coming out of this tzli, but was the tzli successful in making it mevushal? And what's this mevushal? We assume that any dam that's parish min evarim already came out, and it's not dam afterwards. He doesn't add the same sentence that he added before, that rava is not choshesh for marasayin, but it would seem to me that with a kalvachomer, Rav is not choshesh for kalvachomer for marasayin, because if, according to the Rashba, we're talking about something that's fully roasted, and yet there's still moel coming out, if Rav says, well, it's fully roasted, I'm not worried about marasayin. So how much more so in the Ran, that Rav is talking about a case where it's not fully roasted, it's only kemaych ben josoy, it seems like with a kalvachomer, he's not worried about marasayin. Now this leads us to another statement of Shmuel, which I don't think we got to last week, so I think this is where we want to find the place.
Amar Rav Nachman Amar Shmuel Ein Menichim.
Ein Menichim. How many lines up from the bottom is it? About five? Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Ein Menichim is 5, and right. The Amar is 6.
So we go up about 6 lines, and we're going to talk about now the problem of melicha, meaning there's a problem in melicha, because when you do the melicha, or alternatively, with, you know, there's another alternative that substitutes for melicha, and that's tzli, right, to roast it over a fire, and that gets rid of the dam. In such a case, you've got two liquids that are coming out of the basar. One you absolutely don't want because it's dam, and the other you absolutely want, and that's called shuman. Right? There's a certain liquid gravy, we could call it, that's coming out of the piece of meat. Now, at what point are you allowed to start collecting in one receptacle both the dam and the tzli? What you have to accomplish is, your goal is to wait until the moment of time, you know, we're going to shoot off the gun to say, now we're ready, when the dam has already been removed through the process of roasting from the piece of meat. And that's what Rav Nachman, in the name of Shmuel, wants to set up a shiur, a moment of time that I can determine that now I can already put my receptacle under the tzli, under the basar, and let it receive everything. My interest, obviously, is in the shuman. But even if there's something that is liquid and red in color that's coming out of the basar, that's not a problem, because it's not dam. So what is that moment of time? So ein menichim kli tachas habasar, when you're roasting a piece of meat and you want to put a receptacle under the meat on the ground, on the counter, wherever it is, in order to receive and collect the gravy, liquid meat that's coming out, the shuman, it's called in Hebrew, that's flowing out of the tzli, you should not do so ad up until the following point, only past this point. Sheyichle kolmara admumis shebo. That anything that looks like dam, and it has a redness to it, has already come out.
That's stricter than a bob. Because a bob, we had a red liquid that, at least according to some opinions, are okay in the bread.
But again, in Shmuel's frame of reference, if you remember, as long as there was some, you know, propensity of dam, right, there's a redness in the meat, and there's a redness in the piece of bread that was cut, that was underneath the piece of meat, there's a redness.
Yeah, but if it's the thin red liquid, we don't care. Even
so that's perhaps, I'm just suggesting, what Shmuel is saying now, of kola mara dat mumishavo, which means that the process of the meat sending forth, spitting forth, so to speak, all of its dam has come to a conclusion. Up until that point, when the real dam is coming out and it's thick and dark blood, then at that point, if it mixes together with the shuman in the same kli, you're going to have a problem, because you have a mixture of what you want to collect for purposes of gravy, you know, put it on the table, you know, for your Thanksgiving dinner. If you want to mix that with dam, that's a problem. Now, again, I don't think this is dam d'oraisa. I think this is dam mishum maris ayin, I'm assuming. But once you get to the point where the admumis is gone, then there's no maris ayin. Again, I hope I'm not misleading you. The Masifta doesn't give me any clue here. There's not one footnote here. Maybe you have in your In your Gemara, something, but I...
There's a comment here.
Yeah, you have a comment?
Of Schneinzels. Shekvar niflat kol damo shel avasar mitocho.
Right.
Me'ata yotzim shumonim hakshem
le'achila. What was that last bit? What was that last bit, John?
That me'ata yotzim shumonim hakshem le'achila.
Yeah, okay. I honestly think it just confuses me what he says. I think we did better without him.
Okay.
But what I really think is he doesn't have this Ravid. He maybe doesn't know about the Ravid of Maris Ayin.
That is hard to believe.
Then, because that's what really, any note here on Shmuel, I think, should invoke this Ravid about Maris Ayin, that Mara Admumis is equal to Maris Ayin. In other words, even though, again, the lumpness is it's not Dam to Oraisa, it's only Dam to Rabbanu. If you don't say those words, then I don't know how you understand this sugya. You know, if he left that out, kol hakavod. I mean, who am I to possibly question Rabbi Steinsaltz, right?
Well, Rashi says the same thing. Shiyeh kol damo kvar niflat.
Yeah, okay. So I didn't deny that. I said, that's what I said, that what really is dam was already niflat. That's called kola mara admumishabo. At what point do you say that even a dam, which might look like dam, and therefore might be prohibited under the law of Marasai, at what point do you say, genug, enough, we've passed that point, there's no Marasai? And the answer I think that Shmuel is formulating is, sheyichle kol mara admumishabo. So again, if Rabbi Steinsaltz wants to disagree with me, he's allowed to do so. But just to go backwards and not to mention, you know, the structure of the sugya, that doesn't do me any favors. So that's why, again, I would encourage you all to buy a masifta and leave out all the other, you know, well, these, whatever you like. Again, this is not the place to go into a tirade against Rabbi Steinsaltz. Who am I to critique Rabbi Steinsaltz? You know what I'm saying? But I think we're big boys, and we can use the old classic Vilna Shas that has the same Tzuras Hadaf. There's no need to change the Tzuras Hadaf. If he wants to add some of the, what I call the Google stuff, you know, he's very good, Rabbi Steinsaltz, at what I call Google. You know what I mean by Google? When you want to get a picture of something, or you want to know the biology, he's great at etymology. He'll tell you the Greek origins of words. That's wonderful. But here in this Gemara, I think to get to square one, and again, I hope I'm not misleading you, I think we're trying to find a shiur in Hilchus Domeladam, in Hilchus Maris Ayin. At what point do we say that what's coming out of the Basar is not even similar to Dam? It doesn't even trigger off an identification with Dam. I think. Mm-hmm. Can I tell you for sure I'm right? I can.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now the Gemara wants to know like this. There's always going to be some redness to the liquid that comes out of the Basar. It seems that you're giving me a very abstract definition, and it's not a clear barometer. It still remains vague and ambiguous. Is there a way of knowing at what point the process of tzli, of roasting the meat, has reached its fruition, such that anything that comes out of that doesn't even look like dam? And I think the Gemara is looking for some sort of like a halachic barometer, because if you start looking at the admumishavo, you know, you can say it's red, it's not red, you know, maybe you should put on your glasses and it looks red, it's not red. You know, say, who can tell me how red is red? So minoyadina, the Gemara wants to say, give me a halachic definition that cuts ice, so to speak. It's very clear, and it's not ambiguous. So the Gemara says the following. Marzutra Mishmedra Papa Omar Mishatala Timraso. Now the Vav at the end of Timraso is going to cause a lot of confusion here. Why? Because the Vav is a pronoun, it. And whenever you see the word it or a pronoun, you get confused. What is the it? So first let's leave out the Vav and let's just translate Mishatala Timras. And Timras is smoke. When the smoke goes up, what smoke goes up? So Rashi gives two possibilities here. We don't really know what the Gemara has in mind. One possibility is that the smoke from the roasted piece of meat goes up. If you roast the piece of meat, you'll see a kind of a vapor that goes up. As soon as that vapor goes up, bingo, you know that all the damas come out, because that's called halachic sli. That's when sli takes place, and after sli there's no dam. Rashi offers a second interpretation that timra, so its vapor or its smoke is not referring to the piece of meat, but rather to the charcoals that are giving the fire to roast the piece of meat. At that point, once the charcoals have started to set up their vapors, it's no longer like a fire that came in, we know that all the dam has come out. So the footnote here, he adds a few words to Rashi. He says, "Mipnei shekol zman shadam notef al hagecholim heim kabim v'holchim." So Rashi is giving us some sort of physics, a lesson in physics here. And Rashi is saying that as long as the blood keeps, you know, flowing in a certain with a certain oomph, a certain power to them, and a significant amount of dam coming out, then the coals start slowly calming down. You know, they start getting extinguished on a slow level. As soon as the dam stops flowing, then basically the coals are now completely terminated. They've terminated, they've exhausted, or extinguished all their fire. And what happens now is all you have left is the heat that gives off a vapor or a certain smoke. So, Rabosai, next time you roast a piece of raw meat and you want to collect its rotev, make sure that you can look at the piece of meat to see whether it's already given off its vapor, and look at the coals to make sure that it's kind of smoking. And at that point, put your receptacle under the piece of meat and start collecting your shuman. Okay, then. So that's a very important message for all of us, because I'm sure it's quite relevant on a daily basis. That's a little bit of a cynical comment. Anyway, Maskev lo Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi is not happy with this definition of Rav Popa v'dilma. Perhaps, tatoi mata ilo lo mata. There are two sides to the gecholim. Let's go according to Rashi's second interpretation for the moment. There's the top layer of the coals and the bottom layer. Now, it could be that although the top layer of the gecholim is already giving off its vapor, but there may be gecholim underneath it that are still very hot and are not ready to give off that vapor, which indicates the termination of its heat, which would trigger off our assumption that the dam is no longer coming out of the meat. Now let's go back to Rashi's first interpretation. There are two parts to the piece of meat. There's one part of the piece of meat that is tatar, which is the bottom part of the piece of meat that faces, if you will, the under part of the meat that faces the gecholim. And then there's the top part of the meat. So what Rav Ashi is questioning here is, it could be possible that although the basar is mala oshan, meaning it's already giving off this smoke, this vapor, that's only because of the tata, but the law is still might be ready to give off some dam. In other words, so, you know, it's the mala oshan is. He says the following. He says, "Tzido atachton hasomach legecholim, the bottom part of the meat that's close to the coals. He gear kfar l'shir shekola ad mumish shabo, because you're seeing vapor that's coming out of the bottom part of the piece of meat." And that's why it's mala oshan, and there's no dam coming out. But that doesn't really mean it's time to collect the shuman in a receptacle, because tzido ha'elyon, the top part of the piece of meat that doesn't face the gecholim, terem means it hasn't yet, the gia reached the shir zeh. And it could be that there's no vapor yet coming out of the top part, because the vapor that you're seeing is coming from the lower part, and therefore there may be dam that still is dripping from the top part. Elam Rav Ashi, but rather Rav Ashi substitutes a different halacha. At what point can you place a receptacle under the meat that's roasting? and collect the shuman, that's only if ella mishta be tarti galale milcha. In other words, Ravashi offers a magical way of getting rid of the dam, meaning to separate the dam and the shuman, so that there shouldn't be a taromis of the two. And what do? He says you take two pieces of salt, clumps of salt, chaticho shel melach, you put one on the meat itself, and you put another one inside the receptacle that is receiving anything that flows from the meat. And the nature of the salt is such that it draws the blood towards the salt. And then the shuman remains clear, unaffected, or uncontaminated, unmixed with the blood. And it's naki midam. So you gorer the dam, you, in a sense, you know, like a grass, you know, if you have a magnet, right? If you had a magnet. So the magnet that draws the dam is going to separate the dam from the shuman. And what is that magnet? That magnet is the salt. But you need two salts, two clumps of salt. You need one clump on the basar itself, and that already begins the process. And then you need one other clump inside the kli. And both the clump of salt on the meat and the clump of salt inside the receptacle are both drawing, like a magnet, the dam towards it, so that the shuman remains a separate entity and it's not mixed up. Now, on both sides, I don't want to confuse you, but I am confused here. Because we had a sugya back here on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. Let me just see if I can find it. And the Gemara assumed that dam and shuman never really mixed together. Let me just see if I can find that. You remember we had cases where he puts the kaved, you know, the liver on top and the basar underneath the liver, if he puts the basar on top and the liver on the bottom. Omar Abaye, this was the sugya called Beidugi, if you remember that.
Where is this?
This is Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. And I just want to review what we did way back when. Omar Abaye, and we're going to try to find it. It's about 15 lines down from the top. And basically, the Gemara had established in the name of Ravin, let me just see that.
Oh, yeah.
That Moliach Eino Kiroseach. Correct?
Amar Abaye Han de Ravin Leida.
Yeah, just one second. You know what? Maybe that's not. Yeah, I'm sorry. Let's go even earlier on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. Just take a look at 10 lines down from the from the top of the page. You'll see a Gemara about Ka'ara Shemolach Babosar.
Mm.
Okay then? And what we're looking for is, just one second, I'm sorry, again I have to apologize, all the way on the top of the page. Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis on the top of the page. It says that Shapid Kavda Ilah Basra, in other words, if he's putting a piece of liver which is fully saturated with dam on top of meat and he's roasting it, so that's going to be a problem. Why? Because the dam is going to go down into the basar. Okay? So again, let me just go over the case. He's salting liver together with meat, and as a result, the dam from the liver is going to go down into the basar. Okay. Now the Gemara says the following. If the basar is on top of the liver, that was the Gemara on Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, we're not going to go through that now. If the basar was on top, then that's okay. Then you're allowed to roast meat on top of kaved. The Gemara says that kaved has a certain kind of a propensity that the blood will sort of roll off it, whatever it is. Oh. But now the Gemara says, Iika beidugi, if on the other hand he wants to put a receptacle underneath, right, underneath the meat, so he's got, here's what he's got, meat on top, underneath it he's got liver, and on the bottom he wants to put a receptacle, he wants to collect the shuman that comes from the basar, right? This is exactly what we were discussing here today. As he roasts a piece of meat, the shuman comes out, the liquid gravy flows from the piece of meat. So in such a case, the Gemara says, that's awesome. Why? Even though the meat is on top, you're not allowed to collect the dam you're not allowed to put the receptacle on the bottom below the liver, right? So you have meat, liver, and receptacle, because what's going to happen is that this major volume of dam that's coming from the liver is going to be collected inside the Beit Dugi, and that's where you have the shuman, and it's going to mix together. So the Gemara immediately asks the following question. Forget about the liver. Why don't you just tell me that you're not allowed to put a receptacle under the tzli, under the basar? Forget, leave out the liver. Maishna midama de bisra. In other words, even if you're telling me that this receptacle, this Beit Dugi, is going to collect all the what? All the dam of the kaved, right? Forget about the dam of the kaved. Leave out the kaved. There's no kaved here. The dam from the basar itself is going to be collected in this receptacle. And then you can have a taroves of dam and shuman. Oh. So the Gemara says there are two types of dam. There's dam of basar and there's dam of kaved. The problem here with this receptacle, this Beit Dugi, is because it's collecting dam kaved. But the dam of the basar itself is not a problem. Why? Because the Gemara says, dama de bisra shachan. In other words, the shuman itself, it floats on the surface. Floats up to the top. Whereas the dam, in the case of basar, sinks to the bottom. So there's never a taromes. There's never a mixture of dam and shuman. The exception to that rule is the blood of kaved. The blood of kaved is very, very thick. And it also, like the shuman, will rise to the top. And both the dam of the kaved in this case, together with the shuman, will rise to the top. And you have a mixture of dam and shuman. But as far as dam basar is concerned, the Gemara says shachan. It goes all the way down to the bottom. And it does not mix with the shuman that floats to the top. Now, let's fast forward again back to our Gemara on Kuf Yud Beis. And here's where I'm very confused. The Gemara says that Ein menichem kli tachas habasar, that you have a problem, says Shmuel, in putting a receptacle under the meat while you are roasting the meat in order to collect the shuman, because it's going to be a mixture of shuman and dam. And Rav Ashi says, well, I have a solution for that problem. I can separate the shuman from the dam with two clumps of salt, one clump of salt on top of the meat and one clump of salt inside the receptacle. But the underlying premise of this entire sugya, whether you start with Rav Nachman or Shmuel on the bottom of the omen, or with Rav Ashi on the very bottom of the omen, the premise is that there's going to be a mixture of dam and shuman when you collect in one kli. So that's what bothers me, because the Gemara says that you have no problem in roasting meat and collecting in a kli both the dam and the shuman, because the dam goes down to the bottom of the kli and the shuman floats to the top of the kli. So why are we racking our brains to figure out how to separate the dam from the shuman into two clumps of salt? if they don't mix at all. If the shuman floats to the top and the dam down to the bottom, with the exception of kaveh. Now there's no indication here that our Gemara is talking about kaveh. It says, Eimini from Kli Tachas Abasa. It doesn't say Tachas HaKaveh. I don't know, I just can't reconcile the two. There's a long footnote here, but it's on a whole different vein here. Harishona Hikshu, Madua lo Nesar Ashuvan Miyad Kishinote Fadam Lesocha. So this is the principle of Efshel Soto Osir, if you happen to remember, that once the tab of Isa goes into something, you can cook it 50 million times, but you can never remove the Isa. Does that ring a bell to you? That back on Daf Kufches, Efshel Soto Osir?
Yeah.
You heard of it? Okay. And here, we should apply the principle of Efshel Soto. Why? Because it's true that according to Rav Ashi, you can remove the dam from the Shuman with this process of salting, but the dam automatically enters into the Shuman and mixes therein before you put the salt in. So how can the salt reverse the process? So he writes, as an answer to this question, in the name of Tosfos, and he has a Ramban and others, he says that Efshel Soto also means that a machal anesal yidei blia. Notice if there's a tam isur that was balua, eno chozel etero. You can never remove that tam of isur. You can never squeeze it out and separate it. Haynu dafka kasher nosar kol shu mina isur b'machal. Because even after you cook it over and over and over again, there's still some residue of tam isur left. Call it a mashu. Avol b'nidonenu, but in the case of Rav Ashi's salt clumps, Chazal hoyu b'kiyum shamelech motzi legamri es kol adam yashuman v'lo nisha afilu mashu shel dam v'lachein chozer ashuman letero.
So Efshel Soto Asur Amut is not relevant.
In other words, Efshel Soto is not an absolute rule. It's 99.9. But the exception to the rule of Efshel Soto Asur is this case where Chazal understood that the melech would completely remove the dam from this mixture. At the end of the footnote, he quotes the Ravid, Shadama note flashuman, that what we're talking about here is that the dam that drips into this kli to get and mixes with the shuman, eino also elvi shumaras ayin. It's only the rabbanon anyway. Lachein meniach bo melach vadam is asev. So this whole process of Rav Ashi in using the salt to separate the dam is only because the dam itself is a drabbanan, it's a rabbinic dam. It's only mishum maris ayin. Then he quotes Ramban, Shepirei shemikeva shahashuman v'adam shneim lachem. We have two different liquids. Both the shuman and the dam are liquid. Einam bolim zemizeh. Everything remains separate. The shuma remains separate. The dam, and therefore the melech is only clarifying for our naked eye exactly which is the shuman and which is the dam. But it was never awesome to begin with, and therefore we don't apply also the soul. But nobody seems to ask my question that the shuma goes up and the dam goes to the bottom. I don't know. It's the Gemara on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. Umishpei. So this is the first word on Daf Kuf Yud Beis Omid Beis, and it means that after the process of roasting has completed itself, that's called the Gemar Hatzlia. Then Mishpeh means Ya'ares Hashemen as Hashuman. He should pour off the Shuman very carefully and very slowly into another receptacle, such that the dam will remain within the kli itself, the original kli. So you have a kli, a receptacle that's receiving both dam and shuman. You put the salt in, according to Rav Ashi, and after you do this, then you pour off the shuman, which is now separated from the dam, and you do it very carefully, and the shuman ends up in a different utensil. What you're left with in the first utensil is the dam, which you throw out. Now, Rashi here quotes on the third line down from the top the Baha'i, the Baal Halachas Gedolos. And he says the following: what about adding more than two clumps of salt? You might think that the more the merrier. Says the Baha'i, just the opposite. This is called Amosim Goreh. If you add too much, it reverses the situation, makes it worse. Why? Because ribui melach, if you add too much salt, is posek es koach adam v'yoseyu kemayim. In other words, that the reason why the dam could be separated from the shuman through this process of salting is because the dam has a different kind of propensity. It's a different kind of makeup. It's not mayim. It's not a real liquid. It's almost a quasi-solid. But what happens is, if you put in too much salt, then the dam is now very liquidy, and as a result, it really mixes with the shuman. Now, Tosas Divrei Maskil Trei also adds a little bit of explanation to this Bahag, and he says that based on this Bahag, in our time, Bizmanenu, we're not going to allow you to put a kli under a roasted piece of meat and use the magical trick of Rav Ashi, putting in two chatichos bos, a melach, because we're not exactly experts on what is the volume of the salt of each one of these two clumps of salt, and maybe you'll overdo it and put in a larger volume of melach, and you'll get the opposite, you'll trigger off the opposite effect, and therefore you'll violate the rule of the Bahag. So because this Bahag, we don't rely on this whole sugya of Rav Ashi. Now, in the note here, he quotes the Rashba. The Rashba says the following: that Rav Ashi disagrees with Shmuel, and he holds that there's no takana to put a kli under tzli, even if you see that the color of the dam is what was the language? That's not going to do the trick. You must use the takana of salt. Achiyatil bo shtei chatichos melach. And not only that, says the Rashba, we had before a discussion at what point do we identify that we've passed that point and there's no longer admubishal melach. We said when the smoke goes up, the vapor goes up. Eino Rav Ashi eino mekil lahater al yidei takona zu, el al yidei takona zu, afilu kodem shetala timroso. Oh, I'm sorry. I leave out the word Ella. I'm sorry, I added a word here. Eino mekil lahatir. Eino mekil lahatir al yidei takana zu. Afilu kodem shetal. No, this doesn't make sense. One second. Eino mekil lahatir al yidei takana zu. Afilu kodem shetal timros. And there's something wrong here. Okay, I'm going to read the next line because there's an ambiguity here in the language. He says, "Udvarav nemru rak lechumra shegam liachar shetale timro so ein lahatir al yidei mekel lahatir al yidei ein mekel lahata filu eino mekel lahatir al yidei takonasu." Again, the language here bothers me, but I think I understand what the Rashba is saying, despite the ambiguity in the language. The Rashba is saying the following: Shmuel said that you could put this receptacle under the basa tzli and collect the shuman as long as it's after shetichle admumishavo, which the Gemara identifies Rapapa as talatim rosso. Rav Ashi is offering a different solution, a different heter. When are you allowed to put this kli underneath the basar to collect the shuman? That's after you've put two clumps of salt. Rav Ashi is completely rejecting what came before him. And he's saying it's a lechumra, but in both directions. Meaning, if it was kodim shetala tumraso, if it was kodim shetala tumraso, then Rav Ashi would agree that it's automatically osur, and he's not going to allow you to use this magical trick of the two clumps of salt. If it's li'achar shetala tumraso, he's not going to accept Shmuel's kula that it's not called dam anymore. He's going to allow for a takana through these two clumps of salt. So let me just read this. Udvarav nemru rak lechumra. Notice everything that Rav Ashi has to say is lechumra. Shegam li'achar shetala tumraso, which according to Shmuel be mutar, ein lahatir ela b'takana zu. And then if I go back to the previous sentence, in other words, even though he's allowing for this takana, but he's not going to go as far as to allow it, even if it's before talatim rosso. He's going to need two conditions to be fulfilled. It's going to have to be talatim rosso, and then he has to add the two clumps of salt. Vatam, what's the logic of Rav Ashi? If they should code them, shall also timroso sheyeshbo adayin dam vada. So then we're not going to rely on melach to remove the dam and separate it from the shuman if it's vada dam. Avliachas shetal timroso shebechelik atachton shall abosu kvar bevada ein dam. Right, so that's where the vapor came up. We don't know that maybe there's still dam there. So that's only a safek on a level of a drabanan. And now we don't know if there's any dam left. We're gonna rely on the kula of the two clumps of salt. Okay, so Rabbi said this is where we want to stop for today. If you can make a note of it, we're on Daf Kuf Yud Beis Amud Beis, and we're up to Amalei Rav Acha.
First line
on the Amalei. Okay, thank you very much.
What's his name?